Do you want to go to heaven? How about that? That's a good question. That's a tough one. Do you want to go to heaven? Well, I sort of figured you would say yes. But I have another question, a second question. And it's a little bit tougher than you might think at first blush. Here's my second question. Now, you said you wanted to go to heaven. Do you want to go to heaven? Question number two. Why? Why do you want to go to heaven?
To get off this earth.
To get off. I thought you was going to say to get out of here, and I thought.
No, this earth and all its sin and Satan, I want away from.
All right, brother, that's a good answer. It's a lot better than what I thought I was going to get.
Did you say it was a place of bliss?
Place of bliss. That's good. I would say that.
Okay.
I mean, I've never been there, but from what I hear. That's what I'm told. I heard somebody else say something. Be with God. Everything is good. No tears, no pain. I didn't even really want y'all to answer out loud. Y'all done great, though. I'm just keep going. I've never had responses before. I don't know. Like y'all talking to BJ. You know, BJ asked a question. He got answered. Did you notice that? I don't know what to do now. Caught me off guard. I was going to say this. Now, I was going to say, if I were to give you a piece of paper tonight and ask you to list your reasons, and you can still think about it because not everybody answered, kind of make a mental list. Because, you know, if somebody gave me a piece of paper and asked me to do that, I wouldn't. I think that's too private. I'm not going to write it down. You know what I mean? I'm that student. I would just think, I'm going to think about it up here. And like you're going to take it up anyway. Up here, I want you to just think. Just think about your reasons. If you were to list them, if you could list them sequentially, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, why do you want to go to heaven? What order would it be in? Wendell Winkler once told a story about Gus Nichols holding a gospel meeting where he was preaching, where Brother Winkler was preaching. And one night it was announced that Brother Nichols was going to be preaching on heaven. Gus Nichols. Preaching on heaven. And of course, everyone was excited. He said they had to bring out the extra chairs. They had a huge crowd that night. And Brother Winkler said, you know, going in, he imagined that Brother Nichols was going to preach about and paint these beautiful word pictures about the Jasper Walls and the Street of Gold, the Gates of Pearl. So just couldn't hardly wait. And he said that to be honest, he said he was a little bit disappointed after the lesson at first. He said, I was a little bit disappointed until he had time to digest it. I think it was maybe the first meeting when Brother Winkler first started preaching there. He was probably a young man. He said, as I got older, I'm going to come back to that. I want to share with you a quote. Share with you, and I even have it right here. I've got it right here. I wanted you to have a copy, but I didn't want it to be passed out. That's also ugly of me. I thought if they would like a copy after services, you can get one. And I want you to have this. It's not that I don't want you to have it. I do want you to have it if you want it. You ever read any by C.S. Lewis? He was not a member of the Lord's church. He had some good things to say, and truth is truth regardless of the source. But I want you to listen to this and don't get mad. Don't get mad at C.S. Lewis because he died, you know, 50 years ago. Did you know C.S. Lewis died the same day John F. Kennedy died? It's forgotten, but he did. Lewis said this, "Most of us find it very difficult to want heaven at all, except insofar as heaven means reuniting with our friends, with our loved ones who have died." He said one reason for this difficulty is that we have not been trained. He said, our current education tends to fix our minds on this world. But I wanted to notice that first sentence. Aside, he basically says, aside from reuniting with family. I said, why do you want to go to heaven? What comes to your mind? What are you thinking of? He said that aside from reuniting with family, he said, most folks would have a hard time longing for heaven. Now, whether you agree or disagree with that statement, I do think it's interesting. Because chances are, when you think about heaven, one of the very first things you think, It's about people who you know are there. And you're thinking about going and being with them. Now, you know, and be honest, you know, what is the first thing that comes to your mind? And I think this is fair. Is seeing, you know, loved ones who have died, is that a wonderful thing to contemplate? Absolutely. Absolutely. Or I remember when I was growing up, why do you want to go to heaven? I would have thought, well, you know, it sure beats the alternative. I can remember as a teenager, you know, my view of heaven was no matter what heaven is, no matter what it is, it's going to be better than the alternative. But is that your reason? Is that your main reason? Is reuniting with loved ones a motivator? Yes. Is wanting to avoid hell a contributing factor to that? You better believe it is. So there's nothing wrong with those reasons, but are they the only reasons? Or are they the main reasons you want to go to heaven? Back to the story about Brother Nichols. Do you know the main reason Brother Nichols said he wanted to go to heaven and what the greatest thing about heaven is? And Brother Winkler said he preached a one-point sermon that night. Preached 45 minutes on one point. And if you knew of Brother Nichols, that was a short sermon for him. Gospel meeting, he must have held it close because he could have preached way over 45 minutes. But one point, he preached on one point. He said, Brother Winkler, he didn't mention the jasper walls, the streets of gold. He mentioned the gates of pearl. He said that heaven will be great simply because God is there. That was his sermon. You know what's great about heaven? God is there. Brother Winkler said, as a young man, I heard that. He said, it kind of disappointed me. He said, I was expecting. He said, but as I got older, matured, and I thought about it, he said, you know, what would home be? What would home be without the Father? And that's a powerful point. What do you know about heaven? You know, I think I said that if BJ preached on heaven, we'd just move on. But he didn't. I was kind of surprised. I thought he might spend a lesson or two. I don't know why I thought that. I just thought that he would. Well, he didn't. So I thought we might take tonight and then maybe next Wednesday, Lord willing, and talk a little bit about heaven. But, you know, that's hard. To me, that's just hard. And I don't know why there's like a little, is that a door up there? It almost looks like a door. I don't know if that's a defect in the screen or if that's the door that leads to heaven there. I'm not sure. But turn to John 4:24. I'm going to tell you why it's hard to talk about heaven, hard to envision heaven. Ben, you see what I'm talking about there. Do you see the door there? If the clouds are moving, you need to go to the doctor. I don't think those clouds are moving. I don't think they are. We are not yet prepared to grasp, to understand a purely spiritual realm. And that's what heaven is. Heaven is a spiritual place that's hard for us to understand. For example, the Bible clearly teaches us that God is a spirit. You're at John 4:24 and you know the verse. God is spirit, and they that worship Him must worship Him in spirit and in truth. So God is spirit. Well, even though God is a spirit, the Bible frequently speaks of God in physical terms. It talks about, you know, the eyes of God. Talks about, you know, the eyes of the Lord are over the righteous, and His ears are open to their prayers, but the face of the Lord is against them that do evil. Eyes, ears, hands, face. Does God really have eyes and ears and hands? No. He doesn't, does He? How do we know that, right? Jesus said in Luke 24:39, remember when He said, "Handle me and see? A spirit has not flesh and blood and bones as you see me have." So God doesn't have eyes and ears and hands. So why does the Bible speak of God in that way? If God doesn't really have eyes and ears and hands, you can answer. I mean, you can answer. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. If you heard what they said, it's the only way we can understand things of a spiritual nature. It's a figure of speech called anthropomorphism, when things are put into man form, so we can better appreciate that. But here's my point. And so it is with heaven. Right? Heaven is a spiritual place. It's not material. It's not physical. It's spiritual, so God uses figures of speech. Just like with hell, we talked about a couple of weeks ago, we said figures of speech are employed. Outer darkness, we talked about other figures that are used. And I know that I can't even begin to comprehend, to imagine what heaven will be like. But have you ever asked yourself, will there literally be a street of gold? Literally? Gate of pearl? Literally? No, I don't believe there will. You know, we've got that here. We've got that as far as gold and pearls are concerned. We've got those things here. Heaven, whatever it is going to be so far beyond anything that we can currently imagine. But now here, and you may not have this problem, but I suspect folks, some folks do at least, because it's just here that I wanted to make this point. I made myself a notation here. When we say that heaven is a spiritual place, and it is, that's what heaven is. When we say that heaven's a spiritual place and not a physical place, I'm afraid that that leaves us sometimes in our minds with a misconception. A misconception as if heaven is somehow less real or less tangible than our earthly environment. You know, as if things on earth are in living color and heaven somehow in your mind just sort of fades to gray, fades, you know, to white. And all the color is drained out and the vibrancy is gone. And you may not have that. I just remember as a boy, when I would picture heaven, it's like, here we are, and these things are tangible. We can touch them, taste them, you know. But heaven had no color when I pictured it. It was just ephemeral. It was, just, I don't know if it was just like phantom-like, just clear, white, somehow lacking the same reality that earth has. If that's your conception of heaven, I wanted to share with you this quote, this little story from C.S. Lewis. He wrote a lot about heaven. Mere Christianity is one of his better known books. He's probably his best known nonfiction book. And also The Weight of Glory is another great book that he wrote. But this is what Lewis said, trying to get an idea in our minds of what heaven will be like, at least in comparison to here. And Lewis said this, let's construct a fable. Let me tell you a story, he basically says. I want you to imagine, he says, a woman thrown into a dungeon. And while she's in this dungeon, she later gives birth to a son. And this boy grows up seeing nothing but the dungeon walls. He has no conception. Because he can't see out. There's not even, you know, there's just a tiny, tiny window. He can really see nothing from it. Lets just a little bit of light in. So he has no conception of the outside world. But his mother is an artist. And somehow apparently managed to smuggle in a drawing pad and some paper, some pencils, into the dungeon. But at any rate, she tries to teach her son about the outside world. This outside world he's never seen. She tries with her paper and her pencil to describe to him what rivers and mountains and beaches and cities are like. She wants him to know that the outside world is so much better than anything in that old dungeon. But the dungeon's real to him, right? He sees the dungeon. The outside world can only be described in drawings. But one day it dawns on the mother that all these years, despite her very best efforts, her son has been living under a misconception. And she says to him one day, obviously he's grown somewhat, she says, I hope that you don't think that the real world, this outside world that I've been trying to picture to you, I hope you don't think the real world is nothing more than lines drawn in lead pencil. And the boy says, what? What? No pencil marks there? And his whole idea of the outside world now becomes a blank. He's at a total loss. Because those drawings, which were just his mother's way of trying to picture it, were his only conception of the outside world. He has no idea how much seeing a real tree would exceed those two-dimensional drawings that his mother had made. You know, he has no idea that trees aren't composed of pencil lines drawn in lead. But here's the thing. When his mother tells him the outside world's not made up of, you know, pencil drawings, it gave him the impression, it gave him the idea that the outside world is somehow less visible than her drawings. Right? Which is not subtle. Well, Lewis then, he then makes his point. He says, just so with heaven. We can't picture right now what a spiritual environment would be like. And sometimes, as I said, I'm afraid we end up picturing it without color, without essence, without realness. But we know this, friends, heaven is going to be more. It's going to be far more than what we experience now on this earth. This world is only like that mother's pencil drawings on that flat piece of paper. We're in the dungeon. We're like that boy growing up in the dungeon trying to conceive of what heaven will be. But here's what I said all that to say this. Heaven is not going to be less real than earth. It's going to be the greatest reality ever, right? Not less real, not less tangible, but more. So much more. We're just not capable of appreciating it yet. Paul said, 1 Corinthians 15:44, if there is a natural body, then there is a spiritual body. You will have a body in heaven. Like this body, no, flesh and blood cannot inherit the kingdom of God, 1 Corinthians 15:50, but you will have a body nonetheless. I don't understand that. None of us understands that, but it will be a body suited for a spirit world. And so don't think that heaven is just floating around, as it were, nothing tangible, as it were, but it is a spirit world. That's hard to understand. So let me ask you again, what do you know about heaven? And I'll go one step further. How do we even know there is a heaven? What if somebody ask you that? How do you know there is a heaven? Well, I will say this. It's not because you read one of these books that are published seemingly, you know, every other day about somebody going to heaven for a while and then coming back to tell us what it's like. Did you know, I'm not making this up, did you know that there is a name for this whole genre of books? I was looking it up because I remembered the one on the left. I hadn't heard of the one, but there's so many of them. They call it the heavenly tourism industry. That's what it's called. You want to write a book and make a little money? Hey, this little kid went to heaven. Who's going to doubt a kid? And you'll make money. Bestseller, New York Times. Heavenly tourism. Is that not amazing? And what a sad commentary that is on what people are willing to believe. I had a teacher once, this was at my old school, and I taught at Clay Chalkwell. And she was so sweet, she was so nice, she was the art teacher there. And she said, and she went to a large denominational church there in Trustful, and she said, we're having, I don't think it was the Burpos from the book on the left, but it was somebody in that vein. She said, Mr. Renfro, we're having someone come to our church that died and went to heaven, and they're gonna tell us about what they saw and what it was like. She said, what do you think about that? Do you think that that's legitimate? Do you think that that's, you know? And then, you know what I'm thinking in my mind? No, it's not legitimate. But I mean, I'm not gonna say that to her. She's so sweet. But I did say this. I said, well, it's interesting to me that Lazarus, John chapter 11, Lazarus died. Jesus resurrected him from the dead. Lazarus, come forth. Right? Well, here's my question. What did Lazarus tell about his experience on the other side? What does the Apostle John say that Lazarus told his sisters, Mary and Martha, about what he saw in heaven? What does John write about it? None, as my Leah would say. Nothing. It says not a word. Not a word. So Lazarus died, went to heaven, came back. What did he say? Right? Turn to 2 Corinthians chapter 12. 2 Corinthians chapter 12. Paul tells an autobiographical story, a story about himself. He's being humble when he tells it, as if it were another man, but it was him. 2 Corinthians 12, beginning in verse 2, Paul says, and this is the English Standard, he said, "I know a man in Christ who 14 years ago was caught up to the third heaven." Now, whether that was actually happened or whether it was just a vision, he says, whether in the body or out of the body, he said, "I don't know. I can't tell. I don't know what it was." He said, "God knows. That's all that matters." Verse 3, "And I know that this man was caught up into paradise." Then he says, again, whether in the body, out of the body, I don't know. God knows. But look at verse 4. That's what I wanted to call your attention to. "And he heard things," Paul says, is saying, "I heard things that cannot be told," right, comma, "which man may not utter." The American Standard Version there says, and I think the King James says, "things that are not lawful to be uttered." Now look at that. Not lawful. Cannot be told. "Which man may not utter." And yet people are cashing in on it today. There's money to be made in heaven, don't you see? You know, and now, you know, and that's what I want to tell her. You know, look, Lazarus went to heaven. Did he come back talking about it? Do we have anything that he said? No. Paul says, not lawful. Not lawful to tell. Couldn't tell it if I wanted to. It's not lawful to be uttered. So Paul didn't tell us about it. Lazarus, none of these Bible worthies. And yet, you know, Billy Bob Billy from Bayou the Battery and his boy T-Bone done been to heaven. You know, and they're back. T-Bone's back, and he's going to tell us what heaven's like. No, he's not. No, he's not. Right? And you don't want to ever be ugly to people, but no. No. That's not how it goes. But I said that to say this. And this is what I believe Sister Hagen said earlier. What we do know about heaven, we learn from the Bible. Right? Not from those who falsely claim to know something about it that's not revealed, right, in the written Word of God. Now, I wanted to ask you a question. All I'm doing tonight is laying the groundwork, really, for what I want to talk about next week. We want to talk about what is heaven like. But I want you to think tonight a little bit. Doesn't hurt to think. Well, here's what I wanted to ask you. I wanted you to think about. I will, you know, read over a topic, I'll study a topic and think I'm ready to answer a question on that topic, and then somebody at school will ask me a question and I'm like, well, did I not study that? And now I've caught flat-footed, you know. Had a science teacher, one of my friends came to me and he said, "All right, Mr. Renfro," he said, "you teach the Bible?" And, yeah. And he said, "Well, you know, you teach science." He said, "So what do you say to somebody that says the earth, these rocks, there's millions of years old?" Well, I've studied that. We're going to talk about some, you know, radiocarbon dating. Because he want to talk about, what about carbon-14 testing? What about these other radiometric methods? And I could talk about, well, there's certain assumptions built into that. But there may have already been lead in the rock to begin with, or it may, you know, there's like three answers there. But when he caught me right before class on the spot, you know what all I could think of? I'm going to have to get back to you on that. You know, and I did. I printed him off an article. I gave it to him. But here's what I want you to think about. What if somebody that you are talking to does not believe the testimony of the Bible? How would you convince them that there is something after death? I mean, would you tell them, look, if you know, ain't no point in talking to you. I ain't going to talk to you. Is that what we would do? If somebody says, I don't even want to let the Bible testify on its own behalf, can you tell me, Christian, why you believe there is something after death, but don't appeal to the Bible? That's a tough one, isn't it? I mean, what happens to a person when he or she dies? What do you know about that? From a purely physical vantage point, from a purely mechanical vantage point, you don't know anything about it. I don't know anything about it. None of us has died and returned to tell what it's like. And as we said, not a single person raised from the dead in the Bible ever said a single word about what he saw, what he heard, or what the situation was. So no one can give any kind of first-hand personal testimony that heaven even exists. You know, you can't, from your own experience, do that. So, how would you go about convincing somebody who rejects the Bible that there is something after death? That's what I want to talk about for just a minute. Well, when a person dies, there has to be either something after death or nothing after death. Wouldn't you say that's correct? I mean, what other possibilities could there be? Right? There's either something beyond death or there's nothing beyond death. One of those two has to be the case. There's either existence or there's non-existence. Well, they say, well, there's nothing after death. That's the person you're talking to. They say, I think there's nothing after death. Well, if that is the case, then it does not matter one whit how you live here on this earth. Everybody in prison, we ought to ask them this. Do you think it'd be right if we just opened the prison doors and let all the convicts go? Murderers, rapists, just let them go. Think we ought to do that? There's nothing after death. Why shouldn't we just let them all go? Well, they broke the law. Whose law? Whose law did they break? Some man's law, the law of the government. If there's no God, there's no law higher than that of man. Why isn't my law as good as his law? Right? Just let them go. Well, they'll be hesitant to say that. Or you could say, you know, your friend's name is John. No offense, John Varesco. I don't think you believe this. But you say, John, where did he go? John, do you think it'd be okay if your daddy took a chain and just whipped your mama with it? Would that be all right? Would that be an all right thing to do? Well, no, it wouldn't be an all right. Well, why wouldn't it be an all right thing to do if there's nothing after death? Whose law is he breaking? Right? Some man's law, but if there is no God, then why don't his wishes take precedence? Whoever is stronger can prevail. They're going to have to be driven to see that if there is nothing after death, then you can do whatever you can get away with on this earth. Is that not what Paul said in 1 Corinthians 15? If the dead rise not, let us what? Eat and drink, for tomorrow we die. There are no consequences. No consequences to your actions. Well, you don't want to live that way with the idea that there are no consequences, right? And so there is something after death, but there's only three options now. There are only three possibilities as to what that something after death is like. Let's look at them just a second. Have you ever thought about this? All right, option number one. There is something after death, but it's all good for everybody. We're just given options here. There is something after death, but option one is it's all good for everyone. Option number two, there is something after death, but it's all bad for everybody. All good, all bad. Option number three, there's something after death, but it's good for some and it's bad for others. Now let's think about the first option. Everyone goes to heaven. No matter how you lived on this earth, the great heroes of the faith across the centuries and the most notorious criminals that have ever disgraced this earth, everyone will go to heaven. Does that stand to reason? Look at the second option. Everybody who dies goes to hell. Now, I don't know that I've ever heard anyone argue for that, but it would be a logical possibility. I mean, there is a church of Satan after all. Did you know that? There is a church of Satan, if you can believe that. And I can't help but wonder if anybody calls their preachers up on the phone and asks them if they think they're the only ones going to hell. You know? Y'all the only ones going to heaven? Well, you call the church Satan, ask them the same thing. Right? But that is an option. But here's the point. Option one, option two are practically the same at the end of the day. Because do you see that with either of these first two options, the logical consequence is the same? There is no virtue in living right. Do you see that? Option number one, if you live good, you go to heaven. But if you live bad, you go to heaven too. So what's the difference? What's the motivation for living right? What's the motivation for choosing the right, shunning the wrong? Option number two, if you live bad, you go to hell. But if you live good, you go to hell too. So again, what's the difference? The only choice that makes any sense is option number three, namely that there is something after death. And it's good for some, and it's bad for others. And whether it's good for you or bad for you depends on how you live now. Otherwise, you're back to square one. Do you see that? You're back to square one, and it doesn't make any difference how you live. No consequences, right? That's over my head. But I know that I can demonstrate. I know that I can demonstrate just from a logical vantage point. There is something after you die. You're going to have to go step by step and force them to see that. Otherwise, you do whatever you get away with. And nobody, even people that might argue that in theory, they will not live by it practically. No one will live by that philosophy. But we don't just base our case on logic, do we? No. Thankfully, right? Our case is based on objective revelation from God. Now, this is what I want to start. We'll go ahead and start a little bit of what I want to talk about next week. Turn to Revelation chapter 21. Because what we wanted to ask, would you consider that like a 30-minute introduction? I mean, I've got like 5 minutes left. Robert, what's the official time remaining in the lesson? I feel like it's fourth quarter. I got 10 minutes. It's early in the fourth. What does the Bible say about heaven? That's what we want to know. Well, here's another question for you. Here's another question for you to consider. How big will heaven be? How big will heaven be? It's going to be a big place. It's going to be a big place, that's for certain. In Revelation chapter 21, we're given symbolic descriptions of heaven. I want you to notice chapter 21, verses 15 to 17. John writes, "The one who spoke with me had a measuring rod of gold to measure the city and its gates and its walls. The city lies four square," he says, verse 16. "The length is the same as the width. And he measured the city with his rod, 12,000 stadia." This is the ESV. "Its length and width and height are equal. He measured its wall, 144 cubits by human measure," which is also an angel's measurement. But now look at the footnote there. 12,000 stadia, its length and width and height are equal. Cubits, other versions there may have. Well, a stadia, it says, is 607 feet or 185 meters. So that would be 1,380 miles. So heaven here is described, and again, this is symbolic, this is figurative, but see what it's figuring. Heaven is described as a perfect cube, 1,380 miles in one direction, 1,380 miles in another direction, and 1,380 miles from top to bottom. That is a figure of speech. But extrapolating the language, listen to this, that's more than 30 billion square miles. 30 billion. Now, to give you a comparison, the whole face of the earth is just a little bit over 196 million square miles. 30 billion versus 196 million. So the description given here of the heavenly city is over 100 times larger than the size of this whole planet. 100 times larger. And I think, incidentally, this is another proof that heaven is not going to be a refurbished earth. That doctrine is making its rounds that heaven is really the Jehovah's Witnesses. You know, they come to your door, "Don't you want to live forever on a purified earth?" Well, I'm not going to live on a purified earth, and you're not either, because 2 Peter 3:10 says it's going to be burned up. It's gone, right? We're going to meet the Lord in the air. We're not going to be on this earth because it's burned up. It's not going to be on earth. And this, incidentally, is a good point to reference that. The magnitude is far, far beyond this planet itself. But what is the point then? What does it signify? That there is going to be a vast number of people in heaven. Now I know, and you know it too, that the Bible teaches there are going to be many more people lost than there are saved. I know that. But in one of Jesus' parables, you remember He sent out His servants to invite men to the feast. There's going to be a wedding feast. And the people began to make their excuses. I'm sorry, I can't come. And He said, I want you to go back out into the highways, into the hedges, and invite some more. In principle, go out and teach some more. And finally, the record says, and the wedding was filled. You remember that? The wedding, it wasn't empty. It wasn't a partial sellout. The wedding was filled. Right? Meaning, God's sacred purposes will be realized no matter how many people are lost. You think God's plan's not going to be a success? This plan, this scheme of redemption that He's charted out before time even began, before the world was formed, this plan of redemption, He sent His Son to die. Do you think ultimately that plan of redemption's going to be a failure? Or is it going to be a success? What's one of the key words in the book of Revelation? Victory. Right? God's plan is going to be a success. His purposes will be realized no matter how many people are lost. Listen to this. The glory of the saved. And this is hard. This is one of those things. But the glory of the saved will so transcend the misery of the lost that the equation is not even comparable in terms of spiritual mathematics. You think God's going to go just to make that sense? So God going to go, well, my plan didn't work because way more people were lost than are saved. And so I have failed. My plan failed. But at least y'all get to go to heaven. Well, I'm glad y'all are here. Is that going to be the case? The wedding was filled. That's a deep thought. Does God know right now more people are going to be lost than saved? Yeah, here's a thought. Here's one to chew on. Did God know before He ever made the heavens and earth that more people were going to be lost than saved? Yep. He's all-knowing. Can't be not all-knowing and be God. He knew before He made the first person that more of His creatures were going to be lost than were going to be saved, but He made you anyway. What's that say? That's a thought. That's a deep thought. Should God have just said, well, if that's going to be the case, I better just not make man at all. More are going to be lost than are going to be saved, so I better just not make man. He made you anyway. He's got purposes. He's got a plan, and it's going to be successful. Our God is going to be, has always been, cannot be anything other than successful. Go back to that Lewis quote. What is your knowledge of heaven? What do you know about heaven apart from what we all think in our heart? I want to see my loved ones again. Oh, that'll be so wonderful to not have pain and suffering. Those are good things to contemplate, things we look forward to. But do you see how we don't even really scratch the surface when it comes to knowing about heaven? It's like Lewis said, our education, our training tends to fix our minds on this world, things of this world. So what I want to do, I just want to lay the groundwork. I know that was a little bit, thoughty there. I want to get into what the Bible says next week. What will heaven be like, as much as we can appreciate it, for a practical vantage point, a practical standpoint? I appreciate you being here tonight. I appreciate your attendance so very much, and I thank you.